podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sotvedt.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvedt.
And since the sun is shining and the tank is clean, this must be Scaredy Cats, the torture trap edition.
The sun isn't shining. And Finding Nemo is a delightful children's film, Thomas.
It is a delightful children's film. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking today about Saw, the very, very infamous movie. Kickstarted the torture porn kind of genre, sort of.
I'm so excited.
Woo! That's great. So Vicky, what is your favorite torture device? Do you have a favorite torture device?
I've never sat down and ranked them. Historically, I mean, there's something to be said for the rack. That's kind of neat. Something to be said for the Iron Maiden.
Something to be said for the Iron Maiden. Shout out to all those Iron Maidens out there. Something to be said for you.
Yes, I don't recall, actually, historically, Iron Maidens ever being used. I think they were intimidation.
No, I know that usually the spikes in the Iron Maiden weren't enough to hit you. They were just far enough away. Like it was supposed to be that you're forced to stand up straight for hours, basically. Because if you shrug a little bit, then you get stabbed a little bit.
I saw a comic once of an Iron Maiden, but it was full of hands, and the hands just, like, blathered all over you.
Which would be better than getting impaled. 100%.
Right, but it would just give me anxiety the whole time.
But, like, if they lined up these two Iron Maidens and they're like, this one's full of spikes, this one's full of hands, which one do you want? I'd be like, fucking hands, every time.
Well, you're not wrong. You're not wrong about that.
Mm-hmm. For me personally, I've always found, like, again, I say favorite torture device, but it's more likely that the one I find most fascinating and which makes me the most squeamish is somewhere between the brass bowl and the bamboo shoots that the Chinese grow through people. So the brass bowl, for those of you out there that know it, is it's basically a giant metal cow, and you crawl inside of it, and then they set a fire underneath it, and you slowly cook to death inside of the cow.
It's real great.
Yeah, real great. And then the bamboo shoot torture is that they would literally lie you down on top of some bamboo stalks, sharpen the ends of them, and because bamboo grows so fast,
meter a day,
you just become impaled over the course of a day.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's not great.
Yeah.
And of course, this is all I've got really for the introduction, because there isn't actually a very good equivalent to what Jigsaw does in the movies in real life. Like, you can kind of combine a lot of real life serial killers, like H.H. Holmes and his murder hotel and stuff like that, and
Nazi doctors.
Specifically, I guess, Nazi doctors and what the Chinese were doing to the, or Japanese were doing to the Chinese. That's pretty good parallel for what Jigsaw was doing to people.
So don't be a fascist doing medical experiments.
Don't be a Nazi fuck and a fascist fuck doing medical experiments on people. Yeah, like, wow, they're worse than serial killers. I couldn't find, like, a serial killer that was this bad. But, yeah, Nazi fucking scientists. I mean, I guess we could take this moment to say that if you're a Nazi and you're listening to this podcast,
go away. We don't like you.
We don't want your listens. Go get bent. Get fucked. Get out of here.
Also, get some therapy and stop being a Nazi.
Yeah, probably, because that's unhealthy.
Yeah.
It's real unhealthy. Go to therapy and stop fucking listening to this, because we don't want you to listen to this. Anyway, fuck off Nazis. So Saw was directed by James Wan, who also directed The Conjuring, Insidious, and Aquaman. And he
such
is,
a range.
And he is on track to direct Aquaman 2. So good job, James Wan.
Such a range.
Written by Lee Whannell and James Wan together. They both have worked on also Insidious and Aquaman together. Mm-hmm. I believe James Wan also is directed Dead Silence, but produced by Greg Hoffman, Oren Kaltz, and Mark Berg. It stars Lee Whannell as Adam, who's one of the main guys. He's a writer and guy also in the movie. And Cary Elwes as Dr. Lawrence Gordon, who is, of course, Wesley from Princess Bride.
I love that Cary Elwes is in a horror movie, because in person he's, like, actually such a genuine, sweet human being.
Well, it's funny, because he's also in, like, Stranger Things 3 and
as, like, the worst mayor ever.
Worst mayor ever, but he's a lovely person.
He
shout
is.
Out to Cary Elwes, you're great. I know you don't know that we exist, but shout out to you.
Maybe one day.
one day, you'll hear the shout out, maybe. Danny Glover as Detective David Tapp, and many others. The movie had a budget of $1.2 million, which is not huge for modern movies. But it had a box office return to date of $103.9 million. So good
is
investment.
That the whole franchise or just the first
movie? Just the first movie.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Before I jump into fun facts about this movie, I'm going to ask Vicky what Vicky knows about this movie.
There's a dude named Jigsaw who looks like a cross between a clown and a ventriloquist dummy with some like little targets on his cheeks. I think he rides a tricycle at some point. It's in a place, I think a warehouse full of diabolical traps that like maim you horribly to like get keys out of them to unlock locks and things like that. I don't know. It's like an escape room, but one that will murder you.
That's a good way to look at it, yeah.
That's all I know. That's all I got.
That's a real lighthearted description of this franchise.
An escape room that will kill you?
So some fun facts about the movie are Saw started off as a short film made by Lee Whannell and James Wan. So it was just a short, and then it got a movie made out of it, similar to Lights Out and other things like that. The movie was filmed with virtually no rehearsals due to strict time and budget constraints. So all of the performances that you're going to see on screen, you should be extra impressed by because they didn't practice a whole lot. James Wan stitched together Jigsaw's puppet himself. He did not have some set designers do it. There was no like commission made to some doll making company, if such a thing is a thing. Creepy doll.
I'm sure there is.
Creepy doll making company.
I'm sure.
I got some things to Google after this. So he didn't do that. He actually made it himself. And the movie was filmed mostly all in one warehouse. They just switched it up, which is smart. If you know that it's going to be like an industrial complex looking kind of film, you can get a lot of use out of a warehouse.
It's true.
Yeah. So that's all I've got for Saw Part 1 to begin with. So we will be right back because we're about to go watch the movie. When we return, we will cover it, we'll tell you all about it, we'll spoil the shit out of it, it'll be good times. In the meantime, though, stay frosty out there, and we'll see you in a bit. Hi, and welcome back to part two of the podcast. We just got finished watching 2004's film Saw. Currently I am strapped to a table and there's a buzzsaw slowly reaching its way towards my head and Vicky's sitting in a corner cackling to herself.
Wow, why am I the villain in this scenario, Thomas?
Because of course you are. Of course you are.
You can sleep on the couch tonight.
Come on. All right. Anyway. So, we just got finished watching Saw. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with our podcast, this is the point where we're going to be spoiling everything about it. We're going to be going over every little itty-bitty detail in the plot. So if you don't want it spoiled for yourself, go and watch it. Go watch it. Go see it for yourself. And then come listen to this part. But if you don't mind it being spoiled left, right, and center, or if you've seen it already, then listen on. Vicky, do you want to take us away how this movie begins?
Sure. So we open with a guy coming out of a bathtub full of water.
Mm-hmm. And we do see, while he's struggling to get out of the water, something goes down the drain. Yes. We don't know what it is yet.
But the guy coming out of the water, his name is Adam.
Yeah.
And he's clearly very upset.
Yeah.
Clearly.
As you are. Well, I mean, when you wake up in a bathtub after no recollection of how it is you got there, covered in water, yeah, you're gonna be a little bit bothered.
And then he gets out of the bathtub, and it's dark, and there's another voice, and there's this kind of moment of like, what?
As they're both just like, who are you? What's going on? I don't know.
And then there's a very cinematographically cool scene.
Cinematographically?
I don't know.
Are you sure that's a word?
Do you want to hear about the cool scene?
Yes. All right, tell me about the cool thing. Tell me about the cool thing.
There's a very cool scene.
Yeah.
Where the lights are coming on, and they're kind of coming on in that way that, like, old fluorescent lights come on, like, one bank at a time.
Chunk, chunk, chunk.
It's like two lights, and then it cuts to, like, the guy kind of wincing, and then the two lights, and then the guy, and it's getting faster and faster until the lights are all on, and the guy's eyes have kind of adjusted. And that's when dear old Adam finds himself...
Dear old Adam.
Yep. Chained to a post in the world's most decrepit bathroom. And across from him, also chained to a post, is Cary Elwes.
Yeah, so a good way to describe this room in which they find themselves is, listeners, if you close your eyes and imagine a asylum in the 1950s that has been abandoned for many years, imagine said asylum's washroom, right? That's where they are.
But, like, bigger than you expect.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, 20 feet by 20 feet.
Well, like
feet.
A shower room kind
yeah,
of thing.
But yeah, but with just one toilet and a bathtub.
Like a prison shower room kind yeah, of thing.
Without
yeah,
the showers.
Yeah.
Anyways, and there's also a dead guy on the floor and a lot of blood.
Right in the middle. Yeah, his head's blown off. He has a revolver in his
hand. His head isn't blown off. He just has a head wound.
Right, right. There's a big head wound. He's got a revolver in his hand, and he's lying in a pool of his own blood. And there's Adam, and he's directly across from our other protagonist.
Cary Elwes. Who's actually called Lawrence Gordon and is a surgeon.
Lawrence Gordon. Dr. Lawrence Gordon. Yeah.
Yes. And Adam here honestly has the most realistic reaction to finding yourself in a room with a dead body that I've seen in a real long time, which is to look at it, say, oh God, throw up, and then cry.
Sorry, yeah, he does throw up, then cry, because yeah, go, there's a body here, oh my God. But I should mention that the corpse also has, in his other hand, he's got one hand a revolver, and the other hand he has a cassette player.
Oh yes, that's
important.
Mm-hmm. And then we kind of have this scene where, like, Lawrence and Adam are like, who are you? Who are you? Why am I here? I don't know. Why am I here?
And Lawrence is like, let's just be calm about this for a second and really talk about this. Like, Lawrence has been awake for a little while longer than Adam has, and is clearly a little bit further along in coming to terms with their situation.
Yes. He also handles anxiety very differently, because as a surgeon, right, you have to be able to be calm even when things are going terribly.
Right up until he doesn't.
Right up. Well, to be fair, he's calm for an exceptionally long time.
He is. An impressive amount of time he is calm.
Yes. And there's, in this kind of setting up, there's a lack of any sort of soundtrack or atmospheric sound.
It's nothing. It's just these two dudes in a grungy bathroom.
Which,
that's it.
I feel that works much better in setting a tone than in having, like, creepy atmospheric sounds. Because it's more unsettling. Because your brain is searching for the noise that's going to warn you about what's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's more realistic because, and actually both of our characters immediately start ringing off realistic circumstances that could have resulted in them being locked in this bathroom. Adam brings up the fact that they could be being slated for organ harvest.
Actually, I thought that was hilarious when he was like, and my kidneys will be on eBay, because I was like, wow, that's a line that's definitely from 2004, because there was a time in 2004 where everybody was convinced that everybody else was harvesting your kidneys to sell on eBay, and like, that was a legitimate thing. People were concerned when they heard you were going to, like, India and a lot of Asian countries, and they were like,
which,
oh, make sure you don't end up getting your kidneys stolen.
In all fairness, that's what's going on to them, probably the Muslims in China.
Well, that's a different thing than, like, random people arresting you.
Totally. But Dr. Lawrence Gordon's very quick to be like, if you were missing your kidneys, you would be in either A, intense amounts of pain right now, or B, dead. So you are not missing your kidneys, chill out.
And Adam is like, are you sure? And he's like, I am literally a surgeon, my dude.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Adam actually is like, what are you, some kind of surgeon? And he's like, yes, actually, I am.
Yes.
Which would be satisfying, I guess.
Yes. And then we pan on the wall to this brand new clock, and I was so upset for like 3 seconds, because I was like, you have this old grunger, and you just pop the, like, Dollarama brand new clock on there, but then Lawrence is like, hey, that clock is new, obviously the time is important, and I was like, oh,
it was
okay.
Important for us to know the time.
Yes.
Like, he's like, whoever it is that chained us up here wants us to know what time it is.
Yes. And then Adam finds a cassette tape.
Yeah, they dig into their pockets, I think each. Adam does it first,
well,
and then the doctor
does it. Well, Adam
does
it first, and then he tells Lawrence.
Yeah, and
Lawrence
Adam opens up his, and it's an envelope that's been stuffed in his pocket that's got in his name on it, and he opens it up, and there's just a small cassette tape in it, that's all. But Dr. Gordon goes into his envelope that's in his pocket, and there is a cassette tape, a key,
and a bullet. Yes, and it becomes clear at this point the dead body is itself part of the puzzle, because it's got a revolver.
And a tape recorder.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, it takes them a couple tries for Adam to get the thing. He has to use, like, his shirt attached to, like, the chain from the bathtub.
Yeah,
and
he ties
some, like,
his...
fishing.
It's actually pretty smart. One thing I do like about this movie is that, like, they do employ things that make sense and things that if you're sitting there for an hour, you would think to yourself to do. Like, be like,
that's
oh,
true.
Great, I can use this to get the revolver and stuff. In a way, it reminded me a lot of Gerald's Game.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, yeah. You're tied to a location, you've got what you have, you're doing everything you can to survive. Like, yeah, very, very similar kind of vibe.
Yes, and so Adam plays the tape and it's like,
survive.
Yeah.
Basically. You gotta get out of here.
And then Lawrence plays his tape, and it's like, also survive, but kill Adam before 6 o'clock.
Exactly.
Because otherwise you're... Family well, Diana and Allison, who we don't know who they are
right.
yet.
We learn later that's his daughter and his wife.
Right, but they'll die also.
Yeah, but we also learn from the tape recorder that Adam is somebody that made his existence, his whole life, is taking photographs of other people.
They call him a voyeur.
He's a voyeur, yeah, exactly. And
even though he's not
yeah.
really...
And
he's not taking pictures of, like,
and the other
people.
Recording for Dr. Lawrence talks about how he makes his life off of giving other people bad news about how they're going to die, but this time he's going to be the reason people are dying.
Yeah. To be honest, as the movie progressed, I found it very difficult to agree with Lawrence being there. I was like, he actually is just, like, he's kind of a dick, but in the way that, like, successful people are dicks, like... He's not terrible.
But also, like, who says that this serial killer is sane enough to pick realistically, like, people that actually deserve it?
I know, it's just, he just seems weird to me. Anyways.
Weird to be there, sure.
Yes, and so, yes, and I made a note here wondering if Jigsaw, which is the name the police have for the murderer, plans all of his murders around the last murder, because he makes a mention of how when there's so much poison in your blood, the only thing left to do is shoot yourself
and
it's the body on the floor.
Exactly.
And
so,
that revolver is now key to Lawrence's
exactly.
survival.
So the pure implication here is that this guy in the middle of the floor that's dead with a revolver and tape recorder in his hand was a previous victim of Jigsaw who failed whatever it is, like, puzzle room that he was supposed to do, and as a result had to shoot himself.
Yes. And then... they realize that there's a very, very quiet voice on the end of Lawrence's tape saying, follow your heart, and there's a little heart kind of painted on the toilet.
And they're like, oh shit, great. And then Adam unfortunately goes right for the toilet bowl, and is feeling around in this gross sewage, and is like, I don't feel anything. And the doctor's like, nothing. And he's like, no solids anyway. And you're like, ew.
And you're like, just check the tank. And sure enough, the tank has... a plastic wrap package.
Yeah, it's like a garbage bag.
Yes.
And he opens it up and he pulls two hacksaws out of the garbage bags.
Very different object.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he pulls two hacksaws from out of this garbage bag. And then he looks in the garbage bag for a second and it seems like he's looking for something else. And then he pulls it apart and he throws what's left of the garbage bag into the drained bathtub.
Yes. And then, in an interesting move... he does actually toss Lawrence one of the hacksaws, despite them both having heard the tape that Lawrence's whole job
that's
here is to kill Adam.
That's what I find really interesting about the movie, and I don't know whether or not that's just, like, a bad decision or a good decision, is the fact that, like, the doctor hears that he has to kill this other guy, and immediately is like, well, obviously I'm not going to do that. We're going to figure out how to get out of this together. Or whether or not it was dumb of Adam to be like, of course, here's the other hacksaw, come and kill me.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because right up until Lawrence kind of loses his mind at the end, every plan he comes up with is a plan to also
to
get Adam
both.
Out of
exactly.
the situation.
Yeah.
Like, he's genuinely trying not to kill this man.
You gotta give props to Lawrence. It's like, he really is trying to get them both out, even when later he gets the perfect opportunity to kill him and doesn't.
Yes.
So, but anyways, yeah. So they immediately go to work with their hacksaws, obviously, on the chains, because of course.
Yes.
But Adam starts...
Before that,
sorry.
I just want to make a comment on the sawing, because they do it in a really cool way, where it's like, it's Adam sawing, and then it cuts to Lawrence sawing, and then back to Adam and so on. But every time it cuts, it gets closer to the hacksaw, and the sound of the saw gets louder. So just the sawing builds this tension in a way, and you're suddenly like, oh, I don't know who I want to saw through the chain first. Like, this suddenly becomes a very life or death race, and it's just that simple cut, cut, cut,
right.
cut, louder, 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 louder that does it.
But eventually it's resolved when Adam breaks his hacksaw, and it's clearly they're not supposed to be able to saw through their chains with the hacksaw. Now, I'm wondering, is it before this or at this point now that Lawrence recalls the Jigsaw killer? And we get flashbacks.
Just after, because Lawrence is like, it's obvious we're supposed to saw through our feet. And
right.
It's gonna saw through my foot.
Right. I think that's it, yeah. Lawrence actually looks and he's like, oh, he doesn't want us to saw through the chains. He wants us to cut our feet off. That's fucked up. And they're both freaking out about it. And then Lawrence goes, wait a second. I know who has us. And he starts talking about the Jigsaw killer.
Yes, who is... a dude who at one point somebody says is like, well, he's not technically a murderer because his victims kill themselves.
And I'm
like,
shut up.
He's
a murderer.
So we get a flashback to some cops.
But before we get that flashback, Lawrence says the reason he knows about the Jigsaw killer is because he was a suspect in
yes.
the Jigsaw murderers.
That's true. And
murders.
And so it cuts to a room very similar to the room we're in now, except it's full of razor wire, and there's a naked dead guy hanging in the middle of the razor wire.
Big naked fat guy.
Yeah, and so it's the cops investigating, and they say that this body has been here for 3 weeks, and he bled out from cutting himself on the razor wire.
Yeah, and they talk about how the trap that he was in was like...
Well, they find the tape for him.
Yeah, then they play it, and it's essentially that he is on the other side of this cage, and the cage is filled with razor wire all over the place, and the only way out is on the other side of the cage, and the door to leave out of this basement is going to close in 2 hours, and he needs to crawl his way through the razor wire... And the whole reason for this punishment is because apparently this guy is perfectly, like, okay, lives an alright life, but he tried to kill himself last month. And
by cutting his wrists.
Exactly. And he was rescued, and now the Jigsaw Killer wants to see whether or not he actually wanted to kill himself, in which case, cut yourself and die here, or if you were just doing it for attention, crawl your way out, and you'll be given a new lot at life.
Right. And the reason Lawrence is a suspect, is because his pen light is found at the scene through a hole that was obviously used to watch this guy.
And he's a doctor, so yeah.
Yeah, and so they're like, hey, Lawrence, you want to come down to the station with us, Lawrence?
Yeah.
But they interrupt him talking about a guy to some medical students, and he keeps saying, the patient.
At this point, do we learn about the other trap with the guy and the broken glass? And
no,
that's not
yet.
At this point? Okay.
But anyways, Carrie Ellis is being like the patient, and this orderly named Zep comes in and is like, his name is actually John.
Yeah, this orderly named Zep is like, his name is John, as Carrie Ellis is trying to explain what this guy has.
To medical students.
Yeah.
And I, for one, did not find his use of the patient bed, because he's specifically trying to relay information to his students about how he had colon cancer, and because it wasn't caught early enough, it has spread to his brain. Like, I don't know. To me, it didn't feel, like, impersonal or arrogant. It just felt to me in a way that it's like, we all want you to remember that this is about the cancer and that this is somebody you are treating, you know? Like...
Yeah. But this orderly comes by and is like, his name is John and he's amazing.
Yeah. Anyways, and so that's what the cops interrupt to take Harry Elwes down to the station to show him his pen. And then they're like, you know, this guy has done some other things. And then we hear about the guy who was covered in a flammable substance in a room full of broken glass, and he's got a candle with which to read.
Yeah, so we learn that, like, it's this guy, and he is covered in a flammable, like, kerosene or something like that. He has a candle, and that's the only way you can see. He's naked. The floor is covered in broken glass, and he's got poison in his veins. And the antidote is inside of a safe, and there's numbers written all over the wall, and one of the numbers is the correct combination to the safe. And so it's like, he's got to walk around in broken glass, find the combination,
Without
setting himself on fire.
Which
and
he fails at, by
he
the
fails.
Way.
Yeah, it's revealed that he tipped, obviously, at some point, walking around the candle, completely lighting himself on fire, and he died. And we get another flashback of... and by the way, it's Detective Tap
and Singh.
And Singh, right. It's Tap and Singh, detectives, and they're the ones that are looking into these cases.
Yes, and then they're like...
And now they're the ones interviewing Gordon.
Yeah. Yes, and then they do some very bad cop work when they're like, Lawrence, we'd like you to watch the testimony of the only victim to have survived in case it triggers something.
Right, and like...
Which is terrible. Cops should never be like...
It makes no sense.
Here's crime scene evidence.
Totally.
To trigger something. It's
totally.
Like not
it makes absolutely zero sense, but from, like, a movie standpoint...
Right.
Okay.
And the victim is a lady called Amanda, who woke up tied to a chair with basically a reverse bear trap on her head, because there is one key, and it is in the stomach of, the recording says, a dead man who's in on the floor of her room. And if she does not get the key out before the timer on her reverse bear trap goes off, it will spring open and basically rip her jaws off.
Yeah.
Which will kill her.
Oh, definitely.
Very, very efficiently.
Yeah, and it's a creepy doll that tells her that on a TV
Jigsaw.
Screen. Jigsaw the doll. Yeah.
Yes. And so we get this really cool sped up shot. And actually all the shots of the victim stories are really cool because they're really, 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 really fast and really kind of jumpy.
It's meant to show, like, they were given 2 hours. We're not going to show you all of the 2 hours. We're going to speed it up. Yeah.
Right. And so Amanda does make it over to the guy, and his eyes kind of flutter open, and you realize he's alive, but she stabs the shit out
with
of him anyways.
With a small, like, pocket
Yeah, it's like a knife.
It's like a small knife. It's not a big knife. Like, when you think it's like you're gonna be given a knife, you're thinking she's gonna pull out, like, this Bowie or something. Like, no, it's like a Swiss Army knife. It's small.
Yes, and, she does find the key, and she successfully
After
gets...
After rooting around in his guts for a little bit.
Gross.
Fun fact, those are pig guts.
But she does get the key, and she successfully gets the reverse bear trap off just before it springs.
Yeah, she, like, is fumbling around unlocking it. At this point in the movie, Vicky was, like, hyperventilating, like, oh, no, 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 as she was, like, fumbling for the key, like, no, 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 and then threw the trap off, and the trap hits the ground and activates.
Yes.
It's, like, 2 seconds off of her face.
And
yeah.
Then they're like, now, Amanda, you were an opium... Or heroin addict.
Yeah,
like,
I think they don't specify. They're just like drug addict.
No, I think they say opiate. Heroin. I think they say heroin. Anyways, but she's like, yeah, he helped me.
He saved me.
Because he's talking about, like, hey, you have to have an appreciation for life. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure he didn't help you. I'm pretty sure he just gave you mad PTSD.
Totally. But anyway, and then we go back to the present, and Lawrence's wife, Allison, and daughter are being held captive.
Just before that, though.
Oop, okay.
Just before that. Yeah. Adam is... mad and chucks the remains of his hacksaw out the window, which breaks.
Right.
And he picks up a piece because he's really mad at Cary Elwes, and he's like, this is a two-way mirror, which, by the way, there would be no way to tell anything is a two-way mirror because that's not a real thing.
But anyway,
from looking at glass. And so they smash it and they see the camera.
Yeah, there's a camera clearly watching them through this, and he starts throwing shit at the window to try and break it, and Cary Elwes is like, don't be dumb. Clearly, the hacksaws are good enough, but not so good we can saw through our chains. Clearly, the window is enough that you can break it, but not break the glass. Like, everything has been thought out methodically. There's no way we're going to be able to cheat our way out of this.
Yes, and so they're having a moment, and Lawrence is like, would you like to see my wife and daughter?
Right.
And Adam is like, sure, and so he chucks him his wallet.
And I think, have we had a flashback at this point? It's a problem with movies like this. So many flashbacks makes it
so
really
much
hard.
So much of the movie is in flashbacks. It's actually very difficult to, like,
explain.
Even follow the story.
Well, I find it fine when I'm watching it, but trying to explain it, I'm like, oh, when did this flashback happen? But anyways, at some point we do hear that Gordon and his family at home, Lawrence Gordon and his family at home, the relationship is clearly strained with his wife. His wife is like, I wish you would just be mad and tell me that you're, like, not into me anymore, because at least you'll be showing something, some kind of emotion, blah, blah, blah. But the daughter specifically comes and is complaining because there's a man in her room, and she's scared of the man in her room.
Yes. And he goes to check, and he's like, there's no man.
And it's very, very sweet, because it's, like, shown that he's clearly, like, a caring dad, despite the fact that he works long hours. Yeah.
And again, this is one of those moments where I was like, I don't know, I don't feel like Cary Elwes is one of those people who's genuinely just wasting his life, you know? Like,
totally. But anyway, he gets a page then.
Yes, and he leaves.
And yeah, that's when him and his wife are like, and you're like, oh, your relationship's strained.
Yeah, and then he's like, hey, Adam, do you want to see my favorite picture of all of us? It's behind the picture of my daughter.
Yeah, and, like, throws him his wallet, and Adam's like, you got a beautiful daughter, blah, blah.
Yes, and then Adam goes to pull out this picture, and it's been replaced with a Polaroid of his wife and daughter tied to a post with gags on. And on the back, there's a note from Jigsaw. And Adam is a dick and elects to hide this photo in his shirt and just chuck the wallet
specifically the note suggests that they turn off the lights and follow his heart.
Already followed his heart. It's just turn off the lights because you see better without your eyes.
Right. You see better without your eyes. And I think before then, Dr. Gordon got a message that told him that X marks the spot for treasure.
Yes.
Yeah, he got that in a previous note. And then he gets this being like, close your eyes. You see it better when your eyes are closed. And this Polaroid. And yeah, Adam decides to hide it. I don't know whether or not that's him being a dick or whether that's him, like, I don't want to admit to him that his family is in danger because he's being calm right now. And if I know that if I show him this, he's going to start freaking out. Like, I don't know where it was coming from. I think it could go both ways.
To me, this is a situation in which the doctor has clearly been like, let's work together, because he has been very like, let's work together, let's get us both out of this, and I don't know, I feel like...
Well, it could be a mix of that, and it could also be like, this guy was told to kill me.
Yeah.
I don't want to help him. Like, it could go both ways, but anyway, so he throws the wallet back and is like, don't worry about it.
Yes, and then we get another flashback with a weird chronological order, which is Tap sitting in his room with newspaper articles all over the wall, watching a, like, a
Yeah,
surveillance
and
cam.
And he's clearly unhinged
house.
In this particular scene, which is weird because last scene we saw him in, he was a police detective, and now he's like in this grungy apartment, kind of unhinged, following like newspaper clipping lines to try and solve cases and stuff like that. Like it's
yes,
there's quite a difference between his character then and now.
And then we get a flashback of his character.
This movie jumps around a lot.
This is my one complaint: is the movie doesn't want to tell you things in chronological order.
It jumps
order,
around a lot,
which makes it difficult sometimes to follow
who
is doing what.
But it does serve the twist, so it's like.
I think they could have shown. Honestly, I think they could have shown the scene that we're about to talk about and then have Tap
sure.
being deranged. Because,
sure.
like, you don't understand what Tap is doing.
No, you don't.
In this room.
But
yeah. But, yeah, so we get a flashback in which it's clear that, like, Tap is like, must catch this guy. Because he's obsessed with the idea that it's Lawrence.
Yeah, he thinks that the Jigsaw Killer is Lawrence.
Yes, and then he's watching a VHS and rewinding and fast-forwarding. And then he catches, like... the most itty-bitty tiny detail of sound on the VHS indicating a fire somewhere, which to me was the most impressive
this is,
piece
but,
of technology
But this isn't
ever.
In his apartment. This is in the police station.
I said this is...
Right,
we
right,
get
right.
a flashback
oh, right,
from
right.
before.
Yeah, so he's at the police station. He's doing this, and he happens to grab his partner before they go out for drinks, and he's like, that's police sirens, or that's fire sirens, blah, blah, blah. We need to go there. And they basically are able to zero in on the location of this particular video.
Yes, and he's like, we can't get a warrant. And even in this case, you would at least start a warrant process before you went. Because even if you don't have the warrant, you could be like, we had started the process lawfully, but this man is a clear danger to the public.
Probably.
Because a good lawyer otherwise could be like, all the evidence you found in there is null and void. He could have just been in there, you didn't have a warrant.
But I was also saying to Vicky that I don't know if this is true. And if anybody out there that's listening is like a lawyer or a policeman and can like come in on this, chime in on this and let us know. But like... I was wondering how much leeway you would get if you knew that it was a dangerous serial killer who killed lots of people, and that he moves around a lot. So you've got his location right now, and you know that he might be doing some other nefarious shit, and it's just your job to do it and not wait at all.
But that's what I mean. That's when you would call the other guys who are on duty. You can't be the only two police in the entire precinct on duty and say, get a warrant started on this, we are going. And then
yeah.
you can say you have... You are both following due process,
and that's the thing,
but they're just like, let's go, the two of
and
us.
And you do have a precinct that you're theoretically supposed to lean back on and be like, do this other thing for me while I'm doing this.
Right, but instead the two guys are like, let's go catch this incredibly smart and dangerous serial killer ourselves.
That's one of the biggest sins of movies and TV shows generally is like, detectives aren't just like a detective. They're on like a floor, open concept with other detectives and other people that are all like working on stuff together.
Yes, but also... Nobody who's been following a guy of this magnitude would risk such an easy way for him to get a mistrial, because he could be like,
and that's
all
the thing.
Mission's null and void.
But whatever, this is movie land.
Yes.
So they suit up, they get the shotgun, they get the gun, they're headed there now.
Yes, and then there's a bunch of like covered sheets in this kind of warehouse.
Yeah, as they're like breaking in, they kick open the door.
And they uncover one that's like a diorama of the bathroom
of
that
the
Ed
bathroom.
And Lawrence are
yeah,
in now. So
and
clearly he's planning.
Exactly. And we know that this takes place far before that happening. This hasn't even happened yet. And you're looking out at this bathroom and being like, oh shit, he's planning for the trap that hasn't even happened yet.
Yes.
So that's the one thing that I gotta give this movie credit for, is in its flashbacks, it does subtly let you know at what point in the timeline these various scenes take place.
Yes, although I still think they could have had Tip deranged in his room afterwards
totally,
to make more sense.
Totally. I just gotta give him props for being like, oh, okay, that automatically sets this scene an unspecified amount before where the movie's at right now.
That's fair.
Which
and,
is nice.
And then they're continuing to uncover, and one of the things they uncover is
a man
held in a chair with some very big elaborate metal blocks
and
two drill thingies.
Two just drills on either side of his head, but it's not moving or anything like that. Like, they don't set off the trap, and he just, like, wakes up and is like, oh my god, and they're just like, oh, we'll get you out. But then the nearby elevator starts making noises, and they realize the Jigsaw's coming up, and
yes.
they're like, oh shit, okay, this is our only chance to get him. So they cover the guy back up, who's just like, no, probably, cover up the diorama, cover up everything, and then they go and they hide in a corner.
Yes, and then the guy... It was Jigsaw, but you don't see him yet. You just
no,
like,
he's
see, like his feet and
he's covered in disguise.
Yeah.
He's got a big robe on. He looks like a freaking dark wizard from
yeah.
some fantasy book.
So he uncovers Buddy Dude in the chair, and he's like, "You're awake. I need stronger sedatives next time." Anyways, these drills are gonna turn on now.
Yeah, and he sees the robber, or the, not the robber.
The cop?
The cops, yeah. Another thing? Cops and robbers. So, they see the cops, he sees the cops in the corner, and they get up, and they're like, freeze, you son of a bitch, and they got their guns on him, and he's like, okay, but then he steps on a button, and the drills start up, and start moving towards this guy, and he's, like, on the ground, and they're, like, trying to, like, figure out how to stop this trap while also trying to arrest him, and then eventually he throws his gun to the other guy and is like, I'll figure out this trap, you just arrest him.
Yes, and then Jigsaw is like, the key is in that box, but then there's like 100 keys in the box.
It's like 100 keys in the box, and the cops like desperately trying.
And the drills
keys,
are moving closer to the guy's head. And the drills are moving closer
to this guy, and the other guy's screaming. It's a stressful scene. It's a very, very stressful scene.
They do save the guy, though, by breaking the machine, not by finding the key.
The guy eventually is just like, fuck these keys, throws in the middle of the floor, pulls out his gun, and he shoots the drills on either side, shutting them down, which, like, why didn't you just do that? But, you know.
At which point, Tap, who is holding the guy...
He's like approaching him to arrest him.
Yes. Jigsaw whips out this like hidden knife, Assassin's Creed style.
Yeah, it's real Assassin's Creed
style.
And
just like whips around and cuts Tap's throat. and he like collapses and the guy starts
But Tap off. Doesn't die. Tap manages to get his like pressure on it and stuff. And, yeah.
And Sing is like, I'll go after him. And he's going after him.
And Tap's like, yeah, go after him. Smart.
Well, Tap doesn't really say anything because he's kind of gurgling from the blood loss.
He gurgles approvingly. It's like, like as he's like yawning.
And then,
anyway.
And so Sing is going, and then there's a tiny bit of fishing wire that Sing.
Yeah, we see him. We see him pushing through some cobwebs, and then it zooms down, and it's smart. And if anybody needs to set up a tripwire, I was thinking, I've got this in my notes actually, that if ever you're going to set a tripwire up, be real smart to put that in front of cobwebs, because then people are totally distracted by cobwebs and they don't even notice the fishing wire. But anyway,
the fishing wire pulls the trigger of a shotgun, which absolutely explodes.
It's not just one
Sing's
shotgun;
head.
It's like 8 shotguns that are all tied to the roof with strings running through them. And
then
yeah.
Sing just doesn't have a head anymore.
Oh, he explodes! It's great.
And I want to point out at this point, I suddenly understood a Tumblr post I saw about a year ago, which was. I don't understand how Jigsaw hasn't killed himself, because if I lived in his house, I would, like, trip on the stairs, going to make myself some cereal and die, and I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. But after that scene, I was like, ah, yes, how has he not killed himself to get some cereal?
And you know what? Trying to figure out, like, I was like, serial killers that set up to create the intro for this, and eventually I was like, okay, booby traps that have gone wrong. And I couldn't find any good historical examples of booby traps going wrong, because apparently it happens like 4 times a year. And so I googled booby traps gone wrong, and got like, top 10 booby traps gone wrong, 2019. Top 20 booby traps gone wrong, 2018. I'm like, shit, human beings. Yes. You guys just killing yourselves with your own booby traps? What are you doing?
Yes.
Apparently all of us. Apparently every human being kills themselves with booby traps. There's no historical basis.
Yes, and then we learn... that Tap is discharged from the force because he didn't call for backup.
And he got his partner killed as a result.
And got his throat cut and Jigsaw got away.
Yeah,
and
he got fucked. Like, realistically, they got messed up.
Yes.
So, yeah. We do see Jigsaw getting away. He does get shot at, but I think he's faking it.
His leg is wounded in some capacity.
Okay. Is he limping? No, you're right. He is limping.
Like,
so, yeah.
We know he... We don't know the extent, like, we don't know if he just got, like, a bullet in a toe, or if he...
Right, but
he's
limping as he leaves,
and
yes.
Kneecapped himself.
So we do see that he's injured anyway.
Yes. And then we cut back to Adam and Lawrence, and Adam turns the lights off.
Yeah.
And there's a glow in the darkness.
No, he doesn't turn the lights off, because only Lawrence can do that. But Adam's like, they're trying to, like...
Oh, right.
They're trying to grind for ideas, and they're like, what about this? No, that won't work. What about this? No, that won't work. And Adam's like... Why don't you try turning the lights off? Because that's what he read on the back of the photograph. And Lawrence is like, what are you talking about? And he's like, just trust me. And Lawrence is like, okay. And shuts it off. And then, sure enough, there's a big X glowing on the tiles, which is X marks the spot for treasure.
Yes. And so Lawrence gets those tiles off, and there's a box behind it. And then he's like, Adam, how did you know to turn off the lights? And Adam is like...
Instinct? It's my instincts?
And Lawrence is like, Adam, you are a terrible liar.
He's like, Adam, I'm a doctor. I know when someone is lying. But anyways, in this box, he finds a couple of cigarettes.
A lighter. And a cell phone.
And a note. And the note reads, like, you don't need to use the gun to kill him. It's something to a result of that.
Yes, like, and Adam is like, dear like, Jesus, can I have a cigarette?
Yeah, and you realize that Dr. Gordon's looking at the body in the middle of the room, thinking about how the tape said... that if somebody with that much poison, if you had that much poison in your blood, the only thing to do is to kill yourself. And he's clearly thinking like, oh, I could dip the cigarette in the poison and give it to Adam.
Yes. And then...
and then that would be Adam dead. I win.
Except then before he proceeds with that, we have selective plot convenient amnesia because Lauren suddenly recalls what he was doing last night before he woke up here.
I don't know, maybe it's the drug wearing off or whatever.
But, I don't know. Because right after he says it, Adam also is like, golly gee, I also just remembered last night.
Maybe it is a real punctual drug.
I'm just saying, it's real convenient amnesia.
And they it's always like 2 hours exactly.
Yes. And they both realize that, like, yes, we were kidnapped in this parking lot. Not at the same
time. Not at the same time. No. He went back to his house first.
Yes.
But he remembers, he specifically remembers somebody took his picture
while he was in the parking lot.
Lawrence remembers somebody took his picture while he was on his way. And then is that when we see him get grabbed?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
And then Lawrence is like, I'm going to try to make a call with my flip phone. And then when it doesn't work, he does the classic... y'all with your smartphones now, the younger folk, don't remember this, but there was a thing with flip phones.
This movie was made in 2004.
Yeah, but there was a thing with flip phones, and everybody really did this, where sometimes you really did get better reception if you, like, held it up. So he's holding up the flip phone and, like, moving around.
I still sometimes do that. If I'm ever in no reception, I'm always, like, that dick with it above his head as if it's going to make a difference.
That's a big one. Anyway, so just like... it's designed only to receive calls.
And the fact that he's like, cell phones, best invention. And I was like, ha, your phones suck compared to what we have now. Yes. That's funny.
And then we kind of get this breakdown where Adam finally reveal the photo.
But yes, but before then, Lawrence does actually get abducted in the alley, in the...
oh, right, in the parking lot.
Yeah, so as soon as Adam leaves... okay, but basically, after getting his photo taken, he goes to get in his car, but then a weird person in a pig mask, like, comes up behind him and kidnaps him.
Yes.
And then we go back...
this is the problem with so many, like, flashbacks in the past. I know,
there's so many flashbacks. Well, realistically, the movie takes place in three timelines, and it flashes between them.
Right.
But anyway, so we see Adam in his house, and he's in his dark room, and he's developing photos of Lawrence.
Yes, and you're like...
specifically, and we're like, oh, he's the one that took photographs of. He's the one that's been stalking him. Interesting.
Yes, that's why he was called a voyeur.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. And then he goes into his living room and gets grabbed.
Yes, and then...
and that's how he ended up in the bathroom.
Yes, and then there is a call on the cell phone, which is Diana begging her dad to come home.
Yeah.
In tears.
And it's sad. And it shows that it's this ma, it's Allison and Diana together, and they're gagged and they're tied up, and there's this guy in a cloak wandering around with a gun, like pointing it at their heads, and he's got the cell phone up to their faces.
Yes. And I just want to give some props to Cary Elwes here, because he's technically acting into a phone. Like, having this conversation.
That's true. Everything about it, they were just like, here, be emotional into this phone.
But he is giving his best performance of a dad who has just found out his, like, 8-year-old is being held captive and whose life really does hinge on his ability to cut through his own foot and murder a man.
Yeah, it's pretty...
He does a really good job.
He does go on that facials journey, that exact facial journey.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've all been there, but...
yeah. And at this point, Adam is like... yeah, I knew how to turn the lights off because of this Polaroid of them being captive. And Lawrence is like, the fuck, bro? And he's like, I just couldn't show you earlier. And you're like,
he's like, why? Yeah, and again, I couldn't tell whether or not that was just like, fuck you, you're supposed to kill me, whatever. Or I didn't want you to be upset by it.
Yes.
I couldn't tell.
At this point, Lawrence comes up with probably his best plan, which is he looks at the camera and he dips the end of one of the cigarettes in the poison blood.
Yeah.
And then he puts it back in the box.
And then he turns off the light.
Yes. And there's some fumbling for a second while Adam's like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
And
what
we see the figure in the control room watching them. And by the way, I think we've left this part out. But there is scenes with somebody watching them.
Through the camera.
Through the camera, yes. And being like, don't look at me. I can't help you. And like, blah, 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 blah. Like, commenting on them every now and then. And we see, like, the figure, like, being like, what? What's going on?
Yes, and then the lights come back on, and Lawrence is like, Adam, do you still want that cigarette?
Well, yeah, we hear Lawrence be like, Adam, be quiet.
listen to me, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And then they, like, back and forth,
so,
yeah.
And so Lawrence chucks Adam a cigarette and a lighter, and we can see it's not the blood dip cigarette.
No.
And then,
yeah, because there's two of them, and the blood dip cigarette's in the box, and he picks up the other one.
And then Adam overacts his death to the extreme. It's so
good! It's so good! It's totally like your average guy pretending like he needs to die. Like, honestly, what's your average... How is your average person, realistically, if they're told, pretend to die? How are they going to do it?
Like Adam, like but nobody that. Actually like, dies that
it's
way.
It's pretty great. Yes. I love it.
And then Lawrence is like, I did it! I killed him! But then, an electric shock.
Electric shock comes through Adam's cuffs, and he just gets electrocuted. And he's like, what the fuck? And they're like, oh, he's not dead.
And Lawrence is like, that was terrible acting. And he's like,
I was electrocuted! Really? I was electrocuted!
Yes. And then... this, like, yelled conversation in which Adam admits that he was hired to take pictures of Cary Elwes.
Yeah, exactly. And he tells Lawrence that the reason why he's being tested is because he's an unadulterating dickwad.
An unadulterating? Do you mean...
adulterating?
Adulterer?
Adulterating.
No, it's adulterer. Adulterating is changing the substance or something, like adding something to food.
Oh, okay.
Then it's adulterating.
Right, he's
cheating on his wife. He's cheating on his wife. Is the point Tom's trying to make here.
He's cheating on his wife.
Well,
that's
he's not
point.
Actually
yeah.
even cheating
no,
on
no,
his
we
wife.
No, we learn he isn't, but the public perception would be that he is.
Right, because we get this flashback where Adam is taking these pictures of Lawrence going to this hotel room and blah, blah, blah. But when he gets into the hotel room, he's like, and man, you sure didn't take very long at all, blah, blah, blah. But then we get this cut where it's Lawrence with the girl who he's supposed to be cheating on. It's one of his med students from earlier. And he's like, listen, it was wrong of me to do this. I'm sorry to have brought you here.
Yeah.
And then...
so it's clearly, like, almost cheating, but not.
Right.
He's close.
It's very much the way that, in the latest season of Stranger Things, Mike's mom almost sleeps with Billy,
yeah.
and then at the very end is like, I have a family, I can't actually
yeah.
do this. I thought this is what I wanted, but I've realized it's not.
Yeah.
It's very much that, but while he's in the room, there is a phone call.
Yes.
And his med student answers it, and then she's like, it's for you? And this is another really cool shot, where it's just, it's really Cary Elwes, but then just at the very edge of the frame is the med student's hand holding the corded phone. Which is very cool. And, so that's neat. And then he's like, hello? And then the voice on the phone is just like...
I know what you did.
Yes, even though he hasn't actually done anything. And then it hangs up, and we're like, And then he goes out to the parkade where Adam takes his photo,
right.
and then he's abducted.
But here's the point where we kind of realize why Jigsaw would look at Dr. Lawrence and be like, you're a waste of life, go in this, you know.
Yes.
Like, if that's the perception of him, then yeah. Like, yes, he doesn't actually deserve to be here.
Yes.
Necessarily.
And I wanted to point out that at this point I had noticed that the makeup for Lawrence changes throughout the movie.
He gets more and more tired and desperate looking.
Yeah, he gets slightly paler and the circles around his eyes get slightly darker kind of in every
yeah.
shot. And it's in a way that, like, you don't realize when it's happening, but at some point you just go, oh, this is not the man who entered this room at 10:15 this morning, you know?
Yeah. And after Adam then goes to describe the guy that hired him to, like, follow him around, and he realizes that the guy who hired him is Detective Tapp.
Yes.
So we're led to believe that it was Jigsaw at this point that was paying him, but it was actually the detective.
Yes.
Because the detective is still obsessed and thinks that Lawrence is the one that is the killer.
Yes. And then we cut back to Allison and Diana, and Allison has worked out how to untie her hands, but she's still pretending to be tied.
Mm.
And then it hits 6 o'clock, and Cary Elwes starts losing his mind because, as far as he knows, his wife and daughter
But actually, died. Before that, Adam does identify that there's a photograph amongst his photos that he doesn't remember taking.
Right.
And he describes the guy that's in that photograph, and Lawrence identifies him as Zap.
Zep. The
from
orderly.
The orderly from the hospital.
Yes.
Yeah. And suddenly we're all led to believe that it's Zep that
yes.
is the Jigsaw killer.
And then the phone rings again, and it's Zep forcing Allison to tell Lawrence that
he's
too late.
He's failed.
And then, of course, her hands are tied and she lunges at him and gets the gun and some shots go off, which don't hit anybody. But of course, poor Lawrence, hearing this on the phone, has just heard his wife say, you failed, and then gunshots. And that's all Lawrence knows.
Yeah, and so Lawrence starts freaking out and is like, my family needs me, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And Adam's like trying to calm him down, like, dude, we've been cool throughout this, let's figure this out. And then he starts taking off his shirt, ties his shirt around his leg.
Tourniquet
style, pulls it tight, takes the hacksaw, and starts sawing his own leg
off. There's just no reaching rational Lawrence anymore at this point.
No, and Adam's like, chill out, man. We're gonna be cool about this. What are you doing?
And Lawrence is like, no, we ain't gonna be cool about it no more, sir.
No, my family's dying.
Yes.
I need to go.
And then Allison successfully fights off Zep, and the cop, Tap, who is crazy surveilling the house, realizes something is amiss and goes running over. So Allison successfully grabs Diana, and they, like, hide in the closet, and then Tap comes to chase Zep.
Yeah.
There's too many weird one-syllable names in this movie.
I know. It's almost like noir-ish.
In a way. And then the chase goes down into the sewers.
Yeah.
Zep has been hurt at this point, and so has Tap. And then, meanwhile, Carrie Elwes grabs the revolver in the dead guy's hand.
Loads the pistol, and Adam's sitting here like, you don't need to kill me! You don't need to do it!
Yes, and then he shoots Adam.
Yep, and Adam, like, falls over.
And he's like, I did it. Let me go see them. You bastard.
At which point, Zep enters the room.
Well, not quite. Because we see just outside, Tap gets a hold of Zep, but Zep manages to, like, in the most weird angle ever, successfully shoot over his shoulder
and
down
shoot Tap.
Into Tap's chest.
Yeah, and so he shoots Tap. And then he comes down into the room, Zep, with his gun and stuff, and he sees that Adam's dead on the ground and is like, worming his way around Carrie Ellis as Lawrence is grabbing out of me, like, let me see my family! And Tap goes like...
Zep's dead.
Zep. Oh my god, you're right. But Zep looks at him and is like, sorry, no, you failed. Those were the rules. And yes. Then Adam's not so dead.
And just, like, grabs the top of the toilet tank and just goes.
Just bashes this guy's head in. Brutally. And you get, and you're led to kind of believe that maybe Lawrence was aiming for not killing him.
Well, Lawrence says it's just a shoulder
exactly.
wound.
Exactly. And so...
And he's like, I'm gonna go get
him. Because the thing is, Adam kills him, and then Carrie Elwes, like, crawls over to Adam and then looks at him quick and is like, it's just a shoulder wound, you'll be fine. And, of course, the door is open now, and so he's like, I'm gonna go get help, and starts crawling away.
Yes, and he gets out of the room, and Adam's like, Mah!
Adam's like, don't leave me!
But then he finds in Zep's pocket, because he's like, oh, this is the guy, obviously he's gonna have a key.
Yeah.
He finds a cassette tape that is like... Whatever Zep's name is. His last name.
Whatever his last name is. Calls him by Zep's first actual name.
Yes, and then he's like, there is a slow-acting poison in your system.
Yeah, he's like, you're the orderly in the hospital, looked after me. You spend your whole life, like, not being observed, blah, blah, blah. Everybody calls you Zep. And then he's like, yeah, there's a slow-acting poison in your brain, and I want you to take captive this wife and...
Well, he says, will you kill a mother and her child for... To save your own life.
Yeah, exactly.
Is specifically what he says.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Adam is like, oh no, what the fuck? And then the body on the floor that has been there since the beginning of the movie starts to move.
And you're like, what the shit? And Adam's looking at it like, what the shit? As, he stands up, the body at the back of the room, tears off the prosthetic that was the big head wound on his head.
Yes, and this is why at the beginning I made a point to correct his head is blown off, mm-hmm. because it's clearly not, and it is revealed to be John, a.k.a. Yep. the patient with brain cancer.
John Kramer, to be the real Jigsaw Killer.
And I just want to point out that I called it. I did say...
She did say that it was John, but she did not prognosticate that the body in the middle of the room was John.
But I got the killer correct, and I just want to say I was very proud
she
of myself.
She was, did a good, great job. But he also, he reveals to Adam that the key to his chain is actually in the bathtub, and that's what was washed down the drain at the very start of the movie. So he's fucked. The key to his chain is gone.
Yes, and then he just says, you lose, and closes the door.
Game over. He says, yeah. Game over. Bam!
And then Adam is just screaming like, no, don't! And then the credits come on.
Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's 2004's Saw. Again, it is credited for divulging into total torture porn, but it starts off as like a pretty decent horror mystery
movie.
There's
actually less gore in the movie than I was expecting. Like, there's a lot of implied gore.
Right. I love...
And there's some... Very much not implied core.
Totally, but like...
But there's less of it than I thought
I would actually classify this one as a horror mystery, because it does have the trappings of, like, twists and things that are going on, and detectives, and blah, blah, blah.
Yes, so...
So now's the part of the podcast, now that we're done talking about it, that we're going to be rating it. Scale of 1 to 10, we go by 3 different scales, how well it was made, how much we enjoyed it, how scary it was. So, Vicky, scale of 1 to 10, How well made was this movie?
I'm gonna give it, considering its budget and the time and everything, I'm gonna give it a 6.5. And I give it that because, like, there are actually some scenes that are very good. Like, her holding the phone just in frame, the, you know, the hacksaw is getting louder, the lights coming on, the way the previous victim's whole traps are told very, very quickly. Like, a lot of that is really, really good. But the way they choose to intersplice the flashbacks, for me, left me...
A little jarred?
Not even jarred, but it left me confused about key plot points until several scenes later. And to me, you shouldn't be confused when you're trying to follow a plot. Like, to me, that's a way of obfuscating the actual thing. And if you have to resort to that, I don't know. So I give it a 6.5.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's fair. I think a 6.5 is fair. I'm going to give it a 7, just because at the time, it was genius. It was genius. I mean, clearly it was. It launched a franchise on that idea alone, right? A lot of people were... Like, I remember it was infamous. Like, everybody that had seen it was bragging about it, and everybody that couldn't see it was also telling why. Like, it was one of those kind of movies. And so it achieved 100% what it was going for. And on top of that, it's not a terrible watch. I don't know. You might want to take a little bit of a shower afterwards, but, like, it's like 7. I don't know. It's the same kind of style to me as 7.
Yeah.
A little bit worse than 7, but...
So, scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy it, Tums?
I like this movie, weirdly. I'm gonna give it an 8, because, I think the twist is actually legitimately good. I think the mystery is legitimately good. I love that it's the sort of thing that as you're watching, you can be making up your own theories as to what's going on. It's not just brainless. So you, and that there are subtle enough details to kind of hint at the thing. And on top of that, it was a creative idea at the time. So I enjoy the first one whenever I watch it. So 8.
Fair. I think I'm gonna give it a 4.
Ooh.
Well, like, I didn't necessarily enjoy them trying to get out of the traps in the same way that I enjoyed it in Gerald's game.
Mm-hmm.
In large part because, like, I knew it was stacked against them to be almost unwinnable. So a lot of it is just the tension of, like, waiting for them to hurt themselves, which I don't like.
Right.
And that combined with the flashbacks that would leave me confused for 5 minutes, I would find myself being, like, too confused for a couple minutes at a time to be scared.
Sure.
So that's why I give it a 4.
Okay.
For enjoyment.
All right. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary was it?
I'm going to give it a 6.
Yeah.
Which...
Wow.
I think is about the third highest.
But that's still, like, lower than I expect.
Well, again, a lot of the climax...
There were a few times I was looking over at you, you were biting your nails like, no!
I wasn't biting my nails. I wasn't biting my nails. I just got them manicured.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there was a lot of times I was very stressed, but times I was actually afraid were less. Like I said, a lot of the stress relied on, like, me waiting to see how they were going to have to hurt themselves. Like, when he was reaching into the toilet, I was like, oh, is it going to be full of spikes or something? You know, like, I don't know.
Full of spikes?
Well, like...
Oh, no, golf tees! Everywhere!
Like, so, like, yes, it was scary, but at the same time, it wasn't, like... It was anticipation,
right?
For something I knew was coming. They're gonna have to hurt themselves in some horrible way.
Or you know, in order to win, they're gonna have to hurt themselves.
So right. I know in order to win, one of them has to cut their own foot off.
You don't want to watch the foot being cut off.
Right.
Yeah. Totally.
So, So like, that's.
That's fair.
What about you?
Three for me. It was shocking when I first watched it because at the time I'd never seen that level of kind of like. Violence, or just like even implied violence that you're allowed to do in your own head, because you're looking at these traps and the way that it's edited doesn't show you a ton, but like you can do the math in your head of what 2 hours like that would be like, and it's automatically the implications are horrifying. So yeah, that's what I'd give it.
All right.
Totally.
So do you have anything further to add about Saw?
I have nothing further to add about Saw.
All right, so next week, dear listeners, we are taking a bit of a tonal shift, but kind of also not, because it's also a movie about brutally killing people.
Ooh.
We're going to watch The Last House on the Left.
Oh boy. All right. I didn't know that. Interesting. All right. Let's go. But anyway,
and
so
that seemed in theme of people dying in horrible ways.
For sure.
But all we can at least cheer for these people dying in horrible ways.
Woo! Rah, rah, rah! So anyways, so join us then when we come back with that movie. In the meantime, I am Thomas J. Sopvet.
And I'm Vicky Sopvet.
This has been Scaredy Cats. Thanks, and be cool to each other.